gumblers and gamblers. Josh Rosenthal here. Thanks for rating, subscribing, reviewing. Follow me on IG at Rambling and Gambling and email me ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. It's such a long email. I personally almost forgot it. Ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Quick review from last week. Some big wins again. Our experts are on a roll. In particular, Edward Egros said to take the under in the Panthers-Saints game. He nailed it. Easy. Won it by about 10 points, depending on what you got the bet on. Yours truly, I missed last week's long shot or lock. It was the over in the Green Bay-Minnesota game. Got blown up by COVID, but, you know, that's the risk you take recording a pod on Tuesday during a pandemic. Probably shouldn't have invested in Kirk Cousins anyway. So that one's on me. You get what you deserve. Also, I should mention, speaking of long shot or lock, some big news coming up in that segment today. You know, we've been talking about another potential name change. Today may just be the day, my friends. Today's guest is a good one. I think people are really going to enjoy this. He's the co-host of Bostonian versus the Book, a great new show and podcast. I highly, highly recommend. Does a ton of other stuff too. Here he is, Matt Perrault. Matt, you've done a lot. Longtime sports talk guy, podcasts. You are a professor, unless I'm mistaken. In case our listeners don't know, can you give me the quick version of your background and what you're doing now?
Sure. So I am a 1999 graduate for UMass Amherst. I grew up in a town about 20 miles north of Boston called Andover, Mass. I went to UMass to go into music radio and did a couple internships and learned that I should not go into music radio because it was back in the late 90s when every company was buying up every other company. And I had a great person that I worked underneath and she was like, don't go into this business. So I went back to UMass as a sophomore and decided that sports was where I wanted to go. And so did a lot of play-by-play, thought I wanted to do play-by-play, was the voice of UMass women's basketball for 2 years. And then my first job was actually in your neck of the woods. I was the voice of UVA women for one season under Debbie Ryan, realized that I wanted to be on the air every day. And so answered an ad for a job in Alabama of all places. And spent 5 years down there working underneath a guy who started a bunch of big talk people's careers like Sean Hannity and others. I called it radio boot camp for a kid from Boston in his early 20s to go to Alabama for 5 years. But from there, I went all over the country. I've been in Nebraska, Iowa, back to Boston for a little while, and then Texas, and then finally here to Nevada for 6 years. And then I got a chance to leave radio just in December. And start a brand new show called The Bostonian versus the Book, myself being the Bostonian and the book being a 25-year sports book, everything, risk manager, director, Dave Sharapan, who's a guy who's been all over he's now on MLB Network and a variety of other places doing sports betting information and content. And he and I met by happenstance at my old radio job. He walked into my studio and just said, hey, you know, I want to get into this. How could I do it? And we became friends and we got a chance to start this show back in December. So props.com gave us the chance to do that. And the show's been up now for about 3 weeks. So it's been super fun. It's been really exciting. The content keeps on growing and the space keeps on expanding. So it's been a really fun ride.
It's a really good show. I've enjoyed it. What are you teaching at UNLV?
So I teach audio announcing. So it's an entry level course. Basically UNLV has a 4-pronged audio class, I guess you'd call it, where you'd have different, you come in as a sophomore and my job is to get the kids to be proficient on a mic, to be comfortable talking on a microphone and being willing to, you know, basically grow. A lot of these kids come in and they think they want to be on mic or on TV or on camera. So what does that mean? Like, how do you become comfortable? So really it's about repetition. It's about getting people comfortable with being on microphone. So it's a lot of fun. I'm going into my fourth semester of doing it at UNLV, and remote learning was tough in the beginning in the pandemic. I'd never taught a course before, and doing it over like this, it was not easy.
Can't imagine.
But, yeah. So now we're back in person and things have been a little easier now, but it's super rewarding and it's a lot of fun.
You mentioned a bunch of the stops that you made in radio. According to your UNLV bio, I want to repeat this. You have made stops at radio stations in Virginia, Alabama, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Texas, and Vegas. So 9 stops. Obviously, You're a gambling guy. Vegas makes a lot of sense, but you're not from there. You're from Boston. What was it about Vegas that made you want to settle down there?
So I had a chance to move out here to host for the company I was working for before I worked for props.com. They offered me the chance to come host nights out here. And that was 6 years ago. And I jumped at the opportunity. I'd been coming to Vegas for years because one of my other jobs was I was working for rivals.com covering Creighton University basketball. So I was doing recruiting and coming out here for all the recruiting tricks. I mean, literally every July, I was here for a week and a half covering the AAU tournament. So I knew of Vegas a lot. And the first bet I ever made, I was 12 years old at Rockingham Park with my grandfather, who was a bookie himself. And so like I learned from him, and I had been betting kind of off and on ever since. And, you know, in college, betted a lot. And then, you know, when the offshores became really a big thing, I was betting a lot of offshore books. And I just knew that I wanted to be around Vegas and the glamour, and my wife loves Vegas. And so I was like, hey, we can go to Vegas. Do you want to go to Vegas? And she was like, absolutely, let's go. We had a small daughter. She's seven now. But so like raising a kid in Vegas is a really interesting experiment, but it's been super fun. And I was able to kind of look at PAPSPA, the law that was taken down in New Jersey by the Supreme Court that enabled sports gambling to become legalized in a state-by-state basis. I went to my bosses 6 months before PAPSPA got repealed and said, I want to do a show on sports betting. And they were kind of like, wait, what happens if it doesn't get repealed? And I'm like, look, everyone is telling me it's going to be repealed. Let's do this. And so I was hosting the first nationally syndicated sports betting talk show in the country. And that was before PAPSPA. And then once it got overturned, now here we are, what, 2.5, 3 years later, and the content space has exploded.
Yeah, your timing was impeccable. I'll tell you something else that really sticks out with you to me. I think this is really unique. You're a great host. You're great on the mic, but you're also really good at giving picks. And that can be a tough balance. And a lot of times you see people who are really good at one, but not the other. I'm wondering, could you take me through your process when you make a bet? For instance, we have a ton of guys, experts who come on this pod. The number one answer I get to this is, well, I have a statistical model or several statistical models. You're not a statistical model guy though, right?
No, I mean, I come from a sports talk background. So my job has been for years is to analyze teams and to look at film, look at stats, talk about what's happening on the field, court, ice, whatever, and come up with an idea as to what is going to happen next. Essentially, I've been handicapping for years. I just wasn't always putting money behind it, and I wasn't watching the market. The one thing that I do a lot of is I watch the market. I watch numbers, key numbers, and I want to be. I mean, about 4 years ago, Scott Van Pelt made a comment here in Vegas at a convention where he said, I want to be on the side of the sports books more times than not. And a lot of people in the professional betting community got very angry about that, saying like, you can't just blindly do that. You have to do your own research. But generally speaking, the books are laying 100 to our 110. So we are already at a massive disadvantage just on the monetary standpoint. Then the numbers come in, then the point spreads come in. So if I am more often than not on the side the books need, I'm happy with that. I don't want to be on the side of the public. There are some times I was with the public last night with Pittsburgh. You know, I took Moneyline Steelers last night. It closed at 2.5, 3, but I took it at, you know, when it got down to Moneyline, I picked it, I bet it. And that was a public side. So public betting wins. It covers. So I'm not blindly betting with the books, but I do watch the markets. I watch the line move. I watch key numbers, and I want to be on the book side more often than not.
Oh, that makes sense. This is going to be fun today. One more before we get to the games and yeah, stuff that people may actually want to bet and, you know, that kind of thing. You've been in Vegas since what, 2015? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. December of 15. Yeah.
Okay. There must have been some moment, probably a bunch of them, where you were like, well, I can't believe that just happened. I'm asking you off the cuff here. I'm putting you on the spot. Can you
sports or life? Which one?
Take it away, wherever you want to go. Just give me some Vegas story. We love the Vegas stories on this podcast.
Well, when I first moved here, my sister, who I won't say how old she is now, but we were able to sneak her into a nightclub, which I'm pretty confident they thought she was my girlfriend. And I'm pretty confident they thought that this old guy, I'm 44, okay? She's, at the time, underage. She had a fake ID. I'm pretty confident the fake ID was a bad fake ID, and I'm pretty confident they knew that it was not okay to let her in, but we were going to see The Weeknd. It was literally my first weekend ever in Vegas. She had driven with me from, when we moved to Texas, she moved with me from Boston to Texas. So we did it again from Texas to Vegas. And it was a 3-day drive to get out here. And like, so I said, hey, look, we're going to go to this nightclub. I'm going to take you to go see The Weeknd. And she at the time really liked The Weeknd. And I swear it was one of those things where they're like, okay, old guy, young girl. Yeah, go ahead. You can go in. And I was like, that should not have just happened. Like, this is my sister, not my girlfriend, but like, that's Vegas to a T, that they're like, you'll allow this to happen because they look the other way with guys or with girls and they let every guy in. So that was the first time that I'm like, I'm living in a very different place than I have ever lived before. Then The Weeknd came on at 2:30 in the morning. That was the other part of Vegas that I was like, it's 2:30 in the morning. Can I go home? But I think for me, as like living in Vegas and really when the community became a different place, was after the Route 91 shootings happened here and the Mandalay Bay shooting happened, and then the Golden Knights started playing hockey. The market changed dramatically in that moment. We became a sports town, but we became a community. For a long time, people talked about Vegas being very disjointed, transient people. I'm from Boston. My wife's from Boston. My daughter was born in Boston, but we now call Vegas home. And my daughter, like, where are you from? Las Vegas. She's like, she lives here and she's from here in her mind. And so we as a community didn't have a rallying cry. We didn't have that moment. And that awful tragedy in the wake of what happened following with the hockey game and the success of the Golden Knights, Capitals, by the way, thanks for taking the cup away from us. But you had that moment that was like a galvanizing, incredible, emotional moment that I think we all became part of the community in such an amazing way. And it shows what sports can do. It shows the power of an organization, a sports team going on a run in the wake of tragedy. I'm a Patriot fan. In the wake of 9/11, the Patriots go to the Super Bowl and the Patriots win the Super Bowl. Like, it was that type of moment that kind of just felt like, oh my gosh, this is what's supposed to be happening right now. So it's been an incredible run. And now the Raiders have a gigantic game here on Sunday Night Football. And when I moved here, if you had told me we'd have a $2 billion stadium next to the Strip, I don't know if I'd believe you.
Never in a million years, right? And I'm glad to hear something really wonderful and positive coming out of such a tragedy. We're going to talk about the Raiders game here in a second. But for NFL stuff, let's start. Before we get to week 18 and specific bets, Matt, right now, here are the most likely teams to win the Super Bowl. These odds are from FanDuel. Top spot, Packers, +380. The NFC really seems to have just opened up there. Then you've got the Chiefs, 5-1, Bucks and Bills, both +750, Rams, +950, Titans and Cowboys, both 12-1, Pats and Cards, +1700, Bengals, 20-1. That's the top 10. Is there any team in there in that top 10 that you feel super confident about, that you're like, this is the favorite? I would be shocked if this team didn't win.
Well, I think this year in the NFL, given the COVID issues and everything that's happened, I can't come to a consensus opinion like that to say if this team didn't win it, I'd be surprised. But I do think there's value on teams right now. I think the Titans have incredible value. They're 12-1 right now at FanDuel to win it all. They're going to be the one seed as long as they win their game against the Texans this weekend, which should very well happen. The Texans are horrible. Then they have a bye week. Then they're going to have a home game. Right now, it looks like the Buffalo Bills will be going there. That bye week could give Derrick Henry enough time to come back. The Bills are awful. The Patriots ran all over them. Their run defense is not good. You have a committed Titans team to run the football at home. They can win that game. Then they most likely would have the Chiefs coming in. And the Chiefs just got lit up by Joe Burrow and company with the Bengals. So you can throw on them. And that defense may have peaked a little too early. And now they're coming back down. I think at 12-1 odds, the Titans to win the Super Bowl, I mean, if they have Derrick Henry with AJ Brown, with Mike Vrabel's coaching that defense, there's a lot of value on the Titans right now in my mind.
That is exactly where I was going with this. The field, just the teams, it seems to be fairly wide open, especially when compared to previous years. But then beyond that, with all this COVID uncertainty, not knowing who's going to play from one week to the next, I'm not saying something's crazy is going to happen, but if it were to happen, it seems to me this is a good year for it. You mentioned the Titans, Bengals were 20-1. Even a team like the Niners, 34-1. Would it be insane if they catch a couple lucky breaks and make it that far, assuming they actually make it into the playoffs?
Yeah, it's hard for me with the Niners because of Jimmy G's hand, for one thing. And then I'm not trusting Trey Lance to win a game at Lambeau Field. Not yet. Not in, you know, maybe down the road, but not yet. So my Niners feel is a little, I'm a little less high on the Niners. The Packers having the one seed, having home field, having Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams, this connection that just looks like when they throw a ball 40 yards down the field, it's like Aaron walked over and handed it to him. It's the ball placement is so incredible that it's so hard to stop. And then you factor in the crowd and the weather. If you remember last year when the Bucs went and beat the Packers in the NFC Championship game, it was 45 degrees and there were 10,000 fans in the stands. That's not going to be the case most likely this time around. We know we're going to have 60,000 fans in the stands, and we also know that we're going to see most likely colder temperatures in Green Bay. I mean, two nights ago, it was 9 degrees for them on Sunday Night Football. So my gut tells me that Green Bay is going to make it to LA. Like it feels like this is Aaron Rodgers' year. It feels like he could win it all and walk. That might be his game plan here, that if he does win it all, that he just pulls a Peyton Manning and just rides off into the sunset and calls it a career with two championships. But the one thing that last year for Tampa that made them so formidable is that they were not hit by the injury bug. And now you've got Chris Godwin gone for the year with the ACL injury, Antonio Brown, who may or may not be a Buck today. We don't know the answer to that yet, but you got an older Gronkowski. You got two very big injuries on that defense with their linebackers. This is not the same season. This is a much more difficult run for Tampa to go on because obviously no one's repeated since Brady and the Patriots in 2003-04. And the reason is it's really hard to do that. And we're seeing it with the Bucs this year.
Matt, let's do some week 18 lines. This is a tough one because it's pretty difficult to get a feel for who is and who isn't playing or who's motivated to win or whatever. So I'm starting with the obvious one. And by the way, all these lines are from FanDuel as of Tuesday afternoon. That's when we're taping this pod. Chargers coming your way. They're laying 2.5. Last I checked, in Vegas against the Raiders, over under 49.5. Winners in, losers out with this one. Chargers 9-7, beat the Broncos last week, but before that they'd lost to the Texans and the Chiefs. The Raiders, meanwhile, also 9-7. They've won 3 in a row against the Colts, Broncos, and Browns. Also, these teams have already played once this season. Chargers won it 28-14 all the way back in early October. Matt, take it away. No pressure to make a pick unless you want to. Just give me whatever you want to give me on this one in your backyard.
Yeah, I already bet it. I took the 3, and I don't know if we get back to 3. I think there's a lot of professional money coming in on the Raiders plus 3 at home. A lot of it has to do with the fact that Darren Waller is looking like he's going to play. This defense for Gus Bradley has been playing really well, and I got to be honest, I bet my favorite bet in the summertime was betting the over 6.5 wins for the Raiders. That came in easily, but I did not see them. I faded them and bet against them last week against the Colts. I teased it down from 8.5 to 6 to 2.5, thinking that, okay, the Colts are going to win the game by at least 3. Colts lost the game outright. Derek Carr made a couple of really big plays. Hunter Renfrow was phenomenal. And I felt like the Colts, I mean, I don't trust Carson Wentz, but Carson Wentz even played poorly on a level that I didn't think even he was going to play at that, given the stakes that were on the line there for both teams. So this is a defense that's starting to come into their own. It's going to be a rocking atmosphere. The secondary ticket market here in Vegas is already on fire. Going into the year, it was the most expensive secondary ticket of any team in the NFL, but that was because of the rival of the road teams coming. This is now because all of Los Angeles and Oakland are coming to Vegas. If you're a diehard Raider fan, if you've been a fan for a long period of time, you want to be at Allegiant Stadium coming up this weekend on Sunday Night Football with a chance to watch your team knock out the Chargers and make it. So I think it's a field goal game one way or the other. I would, if it's at 2.5 for you, if you can find a 3, take it. Buying it back to 3 is going to be expensive, but I would recommend doing that. I do think the Raiders are going to win the game, but to put money down behind it, I want the 3 points.
How about the Vegas locals? People who haven't necessarily been fans of the Raiders forever, have they bought into this team as well?
Not yet. This is a hockey town, And last year, playing in front of zero fans didn't help. So Mark Davis, the owner, was pretty clear. He said, I'm not putting any fans in stands until we can go to full capacity. So now they're at full capacity and the market is starting to turn. If they win on Sunday night, and then if they were to win a playoff game, just win one, this market will turn very, very quickly. The Golden Knights are still very popular. They're still very good and everybody loves a winner. The Knights have established themselves as basically right now, every year, they're going to be one of the Western Conference teams you're going to talk about. Now, at some point, the Knights are going to have a downward turn. Every franchise has a dip. And when that happens, that's when the Raiders have a chance to really step up and become, I mean, this is a football betting town, but is it a Raider town is the question. There's so many transients. I'm a Patriot fan, like I mentioned. There's so many transients who are here that the Raiders haven't had that moment that the Golden Knights had. Not that I want a tragedy or anything like that to happen in Vegas, but we haven't had the galvanizing moment yet where, okay, the Raiders are from Las Vegas. That's the biggest difference between the Golden Knights and the Raiders. The Raiders have a history in two other markets. The Golden Knights are born and bred. Vegas born is their hashtag on Twitter for that reason. So like people who are transients who live here, I'm a Bruins fan, but behind that, I watch every Golden Knights game. The Raiders are a little bit of a different animal because it feels like we've borrowed them from LA and Oakland. If they win a playoff game, that could all change.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I buy that. San Fran in LA taking on the Rams. Rams favored by 4, over under 44.5. Rams 12-4, already clinched a playoff berth. However, they lock up the NFC West with a win. Could still lose it to the Cardinals. Niners really need this one. They're 9-7, just beat the Texans with Trey Lance under center. And if the Niners lose this game and the Saints win, then the Niners are out. Matt, what do you got?
I think the Saints are going to win. I think the Niners are going to lose. Look, there's a lot riding for a variety of reasons. One, the 2 seed, okay? Cardinals win, Rams lose. That the Rams are in, but it changes their entire path to getting to Los Angeles, getting back to their home stadium to play in the Super Bowl. Matthew Stafford has a lot of people angry at last week. He played really poorly on the road against the Ravens. They won 20-19. They were somewhat fortunate to win that game. Cooper Kupp has got a ton going into this game. He's got 3 records he can go ahead and break, 2 of which are outstanding. The receptions record and the yardage record are insane numbers, but he's doing it in 17 games. Even he said this morning that they should count. This is like a Roger Maris, Babe Ruth conversation, like 154 to 162. And Maris had the asterisk on 61 home runs for a while. So 135 yards, 11 receptions. That's what Cooper Kupp needs to tie both records. You know that this is going to be a force feed game. And you know that when you force feed wide receivers, if they connect long touchdowns, long drives, they're going to score a bunch of points. The problem is Kyle Shanahan has had Sean McVay's number for a while. Like he owns McVay. So this is, they lost the first matchup. This is a big game for the Rams heading into the postseason. I'll take the Rams to win the game by a touchdown, but man, it's going to be, I can't wait to watch this game because both teams will be super motivated.
I'm really excited for this one too. And for the record, Kupp, I believe currently 138 receptions on the season, 3rd all time, 1,829 yards on the season, I believe 5th all time. So definitely something to watch there. One more thing on this game. I just want to point out Jalen Ramsey did hit a teammate last week. I feel like this has been overshadowed just because of all the Antonio Brown craziness. I don't know if it matters. My team had players hit each other a couple weeks ago. They're not going to the playoffs.
That's why it's not a big story. I really think the reason why it's not, Brown definitely overshadows it, but we just saw an offensive lineman or two defensive linemen, one, you know, put his finger in his face and the other guy turn around and throw him a straight right and connect on it. So now it's like, okay, this is just happening now.
It's like, just what it is.
Defensive players are just getting into fights now, and it is what it is. I wouldn't like it on my team, not by any means, but it happens, and we have cameras everywhere. So as long as the team could handle it internally, and I think Washington did a pretty good job of kind of explaining what happened, and then the Rams, I mean, Ramsey's a hothead. We've known that for a long time. So, but he's one of the leaders of that defense. So we don't know the whole story. I don't think it's that big of a deal. But it's definitely, I mean, Ramsey's a guy to watch if he's getting overly emotional and getting burned. If we're seeing like Debo Samuel going off on him, then yeah, maybe something to watch.
Let's do one more of these. Kind of a weird pick, but Tennessee laying 10.5 at Houston, over under 43. Texans 4-12, nothing to play for. However, they have already beaten the Titans once this year. It was back in November. They won 22-13 in Nashville. Now the Titans, they're kind of amazing in very weird ways. They're 11-5. All they need is a win here to clinch the one seed. And according to Aaron Schatz, we've had on the pod before, they would be the only the fourth team ever to get the top spot in a conference with five losses. The three others would be the 89 Broncos, 92 Steelers, 02 Raiders. So this hasn't happened in 20 years. What do you think, Matt? Do the Texans have a chance at pulling another upset against the Titans in this one?
No, but I would take the points. I do think it's too heavy. And I do think this is a Titans team that just wants to win the game. They don't care about how many points they win it by. So you're getting double digit numbers for a team that you know is going to play really hard. The Texans are going to fight. They're going to want to get a victory here, end the year on a high note. That's the one thing you can say about this whole entire coaching staff is that they haven't quit. I mean, it's been amazing to watch and see how the Texans have fought and fought and fought and fought for a really, you know, every week they're in these games. So I think the Titans win, but I think it's more of like a 4-7 point victory for Tennessee. They'll get the one seed, but they'll call the dogs off pretty fast. If they get up by 15 points or so, they'll pull back, take their starters out, backdoor cover written all over that game for the Texans to cover.
Before we move on, what is your single favorite bet of week 18? It can be from the games that we've talked about. Doesn't have to be.
Raiders +3. Is my favorite bet at the moment. It's the only bet I've made so far. I don't normally bet on Tuesday, especially in the COVID era. I don't bet on Tuesday. But the reason why I did decide to bet on it is because I don't think this number is going to stay at 3. I think this number closes at like -1 or maybe even a pick. There's going to be a lot of money on the home Raiders. You got a home dog in a must-win situation. Chargers can't really be trusted. You know, as we know, Brandon Staley can go for fourth downs and really not great opportunity times to do it. He'll go, the sheet told me to do it. Okay, great. Well, you lost the game. So I think people are more or less liking the home dog opportunity here. And I'm one of them. I like the Raiders +3.
I like it. I like it. I think I might tell you on that one. All right, Matt, big moment in rambling and gambling podcast history here. This next segment, we've been calling it long shot or lock. Before that, it was Josh's juice. And basically we've gotten a lot of listener feedback on the name for this. And now we're changing it again. And this time I think it's for good. The listeners have spoken. The last couple of experts that we've had on the pod have also spoken. Everybody seems to prefer calling this cash or trash. You like it? Do you like it?
Yeah, I do like it. Yes.
Okay. Okay. And those pauses were because I think we're going to put sound effects in post. What do you think about cheesy sound effects?
I love cheesy sound effects. I'm a radio guy. I love sound. Yes.
All right. Perfect. All right. Well, you're the third expert in a row to be like, yeah, go with cash or trash. So we're doing it. That's it. It's official. So there you have it. It's cash or trash. Really simple. I'm going to tell you a bet that I'm thinking about making. I'll tell you why I like it. Then you tell me whether it is cash or trash. All right, here we go. Hard week really is. And as such, I'm going very basic with my pick. I'm taking the Saints. They're laying 4.5 in Atlanta versus the Falcons. This is mostly a motivation play for me. The Falcons are out of it. No shot at making the playoffs. Whereas if the Saints win and the Niners lose, they're in. Both the Saints and the Niners play at 4:25 Sunday. The Saints game was moved to that time slot, so there's no risk of the Saints knowing that they're out of it ahead of time. The Falcons did beat the Saints earlier this year, but it was a close one. Came down to a last-second field goal. Trevor Siemian started for the Saints. We've got Taysom Hill likely this week. And again, this, for me, is all about one team needing it, the other team thinking about Cancun or wherever they're headed after this one. I like Sean Payton in this spot too. So not overly confident on this one, but I'm playing it anyway. Matt, please tell me, be real with me. I can take it. Is this cash or trash?
The pick isn't trash, but the number's trash. So the 4.5 is what I'd be nervous about. So this is an offense that does not score. And the Falcons showed last week that they're still fighting and playing pretty hard on the road against the Bills in the weather and the cold. They easily could have laid down in that game and gotten destroyed, and they didn't. They fought hard. Buffalo had a big second half in that game, but in the first half, they were leading 15-14 over the Buffalo Bills. So, Matt Ryan, the one thing that does kind of scare me about taking the points is I got to know about Kyle Pitts. If Pitts is out of this game, I love your play. 4.5 is a great number. This number is going to balloon if Kyle Pitts is out of this game, because he is such a big part of that offense for the Atlanta Falcons. So that's why I haven't gotten involved with this. If Pitts plays, I like +4.5. If he doesn't play, I like your 4.5. So it's a little bit of a wishy-washy answer. I like the Saints to win the game, but with Pitts in the game, I would say Saints by 3. Without him, I think the Saints would cover that 4.5.
Very good. So I am just assuming here that Pitts is out. However, we don't know that. I am making this bet on a Tuesday. I really appreciate you being honest, because sometimes I think people are just charitable with their answers on this, and they tell me they like it, even if they really don't. Don't have to worry about that with you. So I'm gonna make a ruling here. Our first ever official cash or trash was a trash. We'll see how it works out.
If Pitts is playing and it's 4.5, I think Pitts trash. I don't like it. I like Saints by 3.
All right, it's trash. No harm, no foul. Fingers crossed, but I like the honesty, man. All right. You have some time for some semi-quick hitters before we wrap this one up?
Yeah.
All right, first one. How are you feeling? Because if I'm not mistaken, especially towards the beginning of the pandemic, you had like a real battle with COVID, right? And dealt with it for quite some time?
Yeah, I mean, so my wife is a hygienist. So we had COVID when COVID, like we talk about like COVID heavy, like Bud Light and Bud Heavy. We had COVID heavy. We had the real thing in June of 2020 when she was working in a dental office and she got sick, and she was really, really sick. And I tried like the darndest to keep my daughter and I away from her, and we isolated her and we did everything the CDC set us to do. But after about 14 days of my wife slowly starting to recover, then my daughter got sick and then I got sick. And so we lost the entire month of June, 2020 is just gone. Like either me taking care of my wife or me being sick. I was down for about 10 days. She was down for about 2 weeks with COVID. My daughter had it for like 48 hours. And then she was relatively fine. That was one saving grace of the whole thing. But I recovered and I thought I was fine. And then 2 months later, I started to have really debilitating heart pain. And it felt like somebody was like squeezing my heart and I couldn't figure out why. And it got worse and worse and worse. And then it got so bad that I had to walk into an ER and be like, hey, I'm really not doing very well. And the cardiologist yelled at me and was like, I was 43 at the time. He's like, you're 43 years old having heart pain. What are you doing? Like, you should have been in here the second your heart was hurting. And I was like, yeah, I'm sorry. I was dumb. And so they took me, you know, via ambulance and ran like a million tests. I stayed 2 days in the hospital. And the cardiologist came back afterwards and said, I wish I had better news for you, but you had COVID. We don't understand why, but this is a very common problem with people who have COVID. You have unexplained chest pain and your heart's fine. Your blood pressure's fine. You're a relatively healthy person. You know, watch it if you have more problems with it, but we don't know why you're having this unexplained heart pain. So, you know, for the most part, you know, I'm very vigilant now. I'm very pro vaccine. I'm very pro booster and trying to tell everyone why you should do it, because just because you don't die from COVID doesn't mean you're not going to have a situation like me where I'm 43. I have no history of heart problems in my family. And all of a sudden I'm sitting in an ER with a cardiologist running stress tests on me saying, like, you know, we got to figure out what's going on with this. And, you know, I didn't have heart inflammation. I didn't have myocarditis, is something people talk about. I didn't have that. I just had this awful, awful pain in my chest that wouldn't go away. And, you know, thankfully it relatively went away on its own and it has not really come back, but like I overheat now in weird ways. Like I'm training for my first boxing fight that will happen here in February. And I have to overhydrate because for whatever reason, my body dries out really fast now in the wake of COVID. I have no idea why, but like I can become dehydrated really, really quickly and get really lightheaded very fast in the wake of COVID. So, I mean, people say all the time, like, you know, you have to understand something. You don't want this. Like you don't want COVID. And, you know, the vaccines, yes, we can still transmit it. And yes, I mean, my sister just had it last week up in Boston. You know, this new variant is so crazy going around so fast, but the vaccines are how you protect yourself.
some scary stuff, man. And I'm glad you're feeling better. I mean, I'm really happy to hear it, because that
sucks. I mean, I'm an active dude. I'm a really active person. And like, you know, there was a million things that goes through your head of like, is my body ever going to be the same? And, you know, the thing with when we had COVID was the brain fog that comes with it is unexplainable. Like, you can't explain what it's like when your thoughts just aren't right, and you know your thoughts aren't right. And so it's a full body thing. It's like, yeah, it affects your lungs, and yeah, you feel like crap and tired and sick, but the chills and everything else that can't come with it suck. But it's the long-term stuff that is so different, and why I can't stand the flu comparison, because I've had the flu, and I don't talk about the flu, you know, a year and a half after having the flu, I don't still talk about my body being different afterwards.
Yeah. And it seems to hit people in just very different ways, which I think just makes it kind of scary, because there's that fear of the unknown. You don't know.
I think we'll find out in 5-10 years. I think what we're going to find out is that COVID's a blood disease, really is what it is. It gets into your blood. That's why it affects all of your organs. There's going to be certain types of people with certain types of blood types and conditions that either makes you more susceptible to having severe COVID or less susceptible to having severe COVID. And it's just like, we're this big experiment right now. When COVID goes into your body, you don't know what's going to happen.
What's this deal with the fight you've got coming up?
So there's a guy named David Goggins, who was a former US Marine and Green Beret, who wrote a book called You Can't Hurt Me. I turned 40 years old and decided to go get a checkup and go to my doctor and go through, this is all 3 years before the pandemic. But I was like, hey, you know, I'm 40 now. Let's figure out what's going on. Let's get a full diagnostic of what's going on. And what came back was not good. I had spent my 20s kind of traveling the country. I spent my 30s kind of doing whatever the hell I wanted to do and eat whatever I wanted to do, and got married, had a kid, kind of forgot about taking care of myself, and was 30 pounds heavier than I am now, and thought, it's fine. I have a fast metabolism. I'll be fine. And my doctor was like, problem area, problem area, problem area. Like, if you keep going down this road, this is going to be really, really bad for you. And he was right, because 2 months later, I was having emergency surgery for my gallbladder, because my gallbladder was at gallstones, and then my gallbladder was going to explode. So in the wake of that, like, that light bulb went off in my head, and I found this book. Just someone said, hey, why don't you read this book? It's really interesting. And so I read it, and it changed my perspective. And it's a lot of about the way that your brain causes you to essentially make excuses. It's too cold, you know, basically being comfortable being uncomfortable is kind of what the book is all about. And it's also about being willing to be the dumbest person in the room. So I started to lay out different plans that I wanted to make for myself, which was, I've always wanted to box. I've always wanted to play the piano. I've always wanted to do different things. And so the boxing was the first thing. And so I happenstance met a guy named Stefan Bonner, who is a former UFC fighter who fought fought for Ultimate Fighter, is largely credited with like saving the sport. And I met him we had a mutual friend, and he knew what I was doing. And he was like, do you want to train boxing, or do you want to do Tai Bo? Because right now you're just doing like cardio boxing. And so I said, I want to box. So I went in there and I learned under him, and I've had COVID cancel my fight twice now. And canceled it in May of 2020 and canceled it in August of 2020. And now we're here in February of 2022, sorry. And I have been training. I've been working at a gym here called DLX Boxing in Vegas. And so it's a tournament, a master's tournament, and I get to cross that bucket list off. And of course, here comes COVID. And right. I'm just going like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, we're not going to have this happen for a third time, having it be canceled. But I've been trying very hard to get this experience, because I really want to have that experience. I'm only going to do it once. My wife is still furious with me. She's like, why do you want to get punched in the head? Why you can get seriously hurt? I'm like, yeah, I know all that. I understand it, but it's something that I've committed my mind to doing. And then the next thing is, I'm going to learn how to play the piano. So I'm like going to the yin and the yang. So like, first get punched in the head and then go and sit down at a keyboard for hours.
I hope the fight happens. Are you the favorite or the dog heading into
this? I have no idea. It's a tournament. So basically I have zero fights. So it's a master's tournament here. So I can't fight anybody younger than 10 years older or 10 years younger. And I can't fight anybody who's had more than 2 amateur fights on their record. So it's of the same weight class and of the same experience level for the most part. So like, chances are I'm going to fight someone very similar like me who's been training, you know, just trying to get ready for a fight. So I don't know. If I win my first fight, I fight the next day. So it's a 4-person bracket, and I don't see the bracket until I weigh in on the 26th of February for the fight. So it should be wild.
That's ballsy, man. That's really cool. Good luck to you. I wish you the best. I look forward to seeing how that one worked out. All right, couple more for you. These are random. We talked about all the different places that you've lived and worked. I'm always fascinated by that. I've done a bunch of it myself. One more time, the list was Virginia, Alabama, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Texas, and Vegas. Here's the question, and it's totally open to your own interpretation. Of all of those places, you're covering sports, doing that kind of thing the whole time, which one of those stops had the best sports fans and why?
Best sports fans. Okay, I'm gonna say Alabama because of, I often say this, I've worked in the Big 12, I've worked in the ACC, I've worked in the Big 10. The differences between the Big 10, SEC, or Big 10, Big 12, and ACC is that fans know that sports are a part of life. In the SEC, sports is their life. And their self-worth is wrapped up in it. Their self-esteem is wrapped up in it, and it's unhealthy. So I guess the word best is tough to say which would be the best, but in terms of like living and dying with your team and breathing everything that is Crimson Tide, Auburn, Tennessee, whatever you identify with in terms of like what fan base you are, your life is kind of built around that. Like marrying into an Auburn family as a Bama fan is hard, or vice versa. Or like if you move from Tennessee to Alabama and you bring your Tennessee gear and you have a Tennessee flag outside of your house, like they judge you just on that. Like everything about that is just that. So I'll say Alabama fans just because, or people in Alabama, just because of the level of psychosis that comes with it. Not saying it's healthy, but they are definitely of the most insane diehard fans I've ever experienced.
Last one I have for you. What's your best advice for casual gamblers, gamblers just starting out? Maybe something that you wish you knew way back when, which I guess in your case was when you were like 12, but just, you know, what's your advice for somebody starting out casual gambling?
Yeah. I mean, 6 years ago, I mean, even, you know, I bet like everybody else. I was a casual gambler. I didn't understand the market. I didn't understand line movement. I didn't understand where the books were and when a book takes a position or key numbers. I think the most important advice I ever give anybody when it comes to starting out gambling is that flat wagering is a really, really smart way of betting. So what I mean by that is if you have a bankroll, let's just say you have $100, I believe that 3 to 5% of that bankroll is your one unit. So it's $3 or $5. So you're going to put down on a wager. That should be your consistent bet every single time you wager. And you should track it. Keep track of those bets. Don't bet parlays. Parlays are the sucker bet. Everyone loves to do them. They're lottery ticket bets. If you actually want to keep your bankroll alive, if you don't care about the money, then fine, go bet and parlays till you're blue in the face. But if you actually care about, if it's not $100, but like $10,000 or $5,000, and you want to protect that, betting parlays are stupid. So stay away from parlays and flat wager, meaning if you bet -150 or +125, the $10, $5, $20, whatever it is, that doesn't change. You don't change the bet based upon the juice. The juice doesn't matter. You got to pick and choose what bet you're going to make based upon how much money you're committing versus how much money the book is committing. But that's going to enable you to stay in the game long-term. The book knows the more you play, the more likely it is you lose. Just always remember that. We are the book. Everything is stacked against us as the player. So we have to be incredibly careful. And the other piece of advice I wish I knew, the best weapon as a gambler you have is the ability to not bet. We don't have to bet. They have to put numbers up. We don't have to bet. We can pick and choose and find if you're wishy-washy on it. If it's a Sunday night football game and man, I'm home alone and I don't like that number, but you know, I'm going to bet it just because. That's not good. Okay. You don't have to bet. Just watch the game. There's no reason why you don't have to have action on a game to enjoy it. And if you have to, make it up hypothetically. Just say, okay, in my brain, I bet $20 on this team to win, and then act like you have money on it, even though you don't, because you don't have to bet. You get in trouble when you feel like you have to.
I think that's awesome advice. In particular, the 3 to 5%, somebody else came on this podcast it was before the football season, said the same thing. I actually stuck with it. It's helped me tremendously. I haven't made a ton of money this year, but I am up, which is different than in previous years. It's really good advice.
it will limit your losses. So like you could say you're not going to win as much, but the idea that I have, at least from my own personal bankroll, is that I know the roller coaster is coming. I know I'm going to go down. I know I'm going to have some weeks where, like right now, over the last 2 weeks, I'm 30-15-1. Okay. But the week before, I was 2-12.
Right.
So I was ice cold and then I came back up. It's the roller coaster ride that you have to understand that you're going to be in when it comes to betting and betting consistently. And you have to be able to survive the downward turn because it's going to happen. And so the flat wagering philosophy enables you to play defense when you're not seeing the board correctly and not making good picks. Sure, you aren't going to win as much, but you aren't going to lose as much as well.
And that's half the battle, if not more, right there. Matt, everything I got for you, man. Anything else you want to throw out there? Anything I'm missing here?
No, you guys can follow me on Twitter at SportsTalkMatt is my Twitter handle. You'll see everything that I'm doing. I do the Daily Juice podcast, which is a daily picks podcast. If you just want my picks, that's it. If you like rambling and stories and talking about books and whatnot and getting an extrovert's opinion, the Bostonian versus the book is 1 p.m. Eastern time every Monday through Friday on the Props YouTube channel.
Oh, and what was the name of the book that you recommended again to?
So you can't
that got
me.
You in the can't hurt me. That's what it
you
was.
Can't hurt me by David Goggins. It's available everywhere. He's an incredible story. He set the record for pull-ups, the Guinness Book of World Record for pull-ups. I think he's still the first only person ever to be a Green Beret and a Navy SEAL. That's both.
Big.
Yeah, the guy's he's insane. Like my wife thinks he's mentally ill because he's so crazy, but I think the guy is so inspirational and just has a really great way of explaining how your brain literally plays tricks on you to get you to stop doing the things you should be doing.
I'm going to check that one out. Got you in a boxing ring. That's pretty cool, man. I like that.
Got me. It's cool. It's fun.
For some reason too, book reviews or book recommendations tend to do really well with our listeners. They always want to hear them. They always want
to. Oh, good. Yeah. I guarantee a lot of them know. I mean, Goggins, it's a New York Times bestseller. It's he lives here in Vegas here part-time now. And like he's a guy, he runs ultra marathons. He runs 100-mile races. Like he's on a different level than what I'm on, but it's incredible to kind of look at what the human body and the human brain is able to do and how often we say to ourselves, yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. Or yeah, I can eat that now because whatever, like our brain is designed to screw with us. And you have to recognize that the easy way is what the brain always wants. And you got to fight that.
Can't thank you enough, man. Everybody check out Bostonian versus the book. Really, really good show, pod, all of the above. I've really enjoyed it. So make sure you listen, watch, what have you. Matt Perrault, can't thank you enough.
Thanks, guys.
There it is, Ramblers and Gamblers. Episode 22 is in the books. Episode 22, how do you like that? Some awesome stuff set up for the weeks ahead. Big playoff preview next week. The plan is to go through every single game. Bringing back a really good guest for that one, a guy who came on early in the season and crushed it. I made a couple bucks tailing him, so hoping that's how it goes again. And actually have a really good guest lined up for 2 weeks from now, too, getting ahead of the game in the new year. Not always the case here on the RNG pod, so that is pretty good. Pretty gosh darn good. Happy New Year, everybody. IG at Rambling and Gambling. Email me. ramblingandgamblingpodcast@gmail.com. Rate, subscribe, review, please, and have a great week.